Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, co-host of the program, along with Mr. Gary Baker. And we got a whole host of guys in studio as well. Kasten Thomas is back with us. He is not only one of our tech experts, but he's going to be here as the Chuck Norris of securing and managing mobile and networks. We'll be talking with him about the eyes of Google being upon us. Ed Riddell and Cal Carson are in studio as well. It's a great program we have lined up for you on the Internet Advisor.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Riddell.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, hour number one, and we have got quite a program. In some ways, I hope we scare the daylights out of you with this first one. I've got my roll of tin foil, and we're ready to deal with Google having its eyes upon us. Kasten Thomas, good to have you in studio with us.
Glad to be here.
Kasten is going to be giving us, a better idea of the people who are watching us, who's got their eyes on us and what they're doing with what they see. Also with us, Ed Riddell in studio. Hi, Ed.
Always great, Foster.
Good to have you here. And Cal Thomas back from the icy lands.
Cal Thomas, he said.
Oh,
that was pretty good.
Cal Carson.
Which is a merge between the ever-popular Kasten Thomas and me. And my God, I'm looking across at him from the mic, and, you know, he does kind of look like me. He has a nose. I have a nose.
You're much better looking than me, Cal.
I got a face for radio, baby.
And he called me Cal last week.
Now you're even.
I think someone is just standing in for me. That's what it is. No, it's really great to be back. I am so glad to be back here at the mic again. It is a wonderful place to be with you guys, and I really enjoy doing this, so it's good to be back.
Hey, we have a special feature right now, and that's with Mr. Gary Baker, the tech slice that he's going to be bringing us today from the deck of the Shared Adventure.
That's right. You know, it's actually, I'm at the tech deck, I think.
The tech deck. There we go.
Yes, of course. So, hey, I was just curious, you guys, have you seen what's going on with Amazon Go?
Yes,
it's
all the rage.
It was supposed to open a year ago, and it finally opened this last week, and it is a grab-and-go kind of grocery store that Amazon has been trying to perfect for about 5 years. There's one store that they opened in Seattle. It's about the size of a 7-Eleven or so, but you're able to go in, you download the app, Amazon Go, you scan it just like you scan on your boarding pass on an airplane, and you walk in, you put things in your bag, and you walk straight out.
This is
Amazon
the place.
Amazon bills you.
And this is the
no
place
checkout
that's
line.
Supposed to eliminate lines.
Yeah.
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 See, this really baffles me, I got to say, because the whole purpose of Amazon when it came out was you order the stuff online and they bring it to your house. Now they're actually taking you back to brick and mortar again, which is really weird.
But done in such a different way, right? I mean, no lines. You don't stop and pay. You pay with, you know, with Apple Pay, or you know, you have to hook up a credit card to Amazon Go, and you know, it's very convenient. So if you could picture yourself walking down the street at lunchtime, walking in someplace, or you know, you're a little thirsty, walk in, grab a Coke, and walk out.
Well, I'm sure Amazon's going to get a picture of me. You know, the surveillance on a store like that's got to be just overwhelming.
Well, it's based on having, my right area is based on having all these cameras in the ceiling that are watching stock as well as you.
Yeah, but you know, what could be more convenient? But what's more convenient than sitting at my house having them bring the stuff to me?
Yeah, good point.
And there's no lines.
and we probably have all been standing there when you watch somebody just grab a Coke and walk out in the past, only this time they actually charge you for it.
Yes, not shoplifting. I tell you, this, however, would be the ultimate straw for my wife. She's infuriated now at those self-checkout lines because it eliminates jobs. This would even wipe out the jobs of the people who were standing by the self-checkout line.
Well, I mean, if it was a place that I frequented on the way to work and I just wanted to grab a Monster and a bag of chips and a sub sandwich and then get out, and I'm in and out of there in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, that would be worth it.
That's certainly.
And I think that's what they're targeting.
I'm still not buying it. Why don't we have those drones deliver it right there at your work? So by the time you get to work, you order it in your car as you're driving along. When you get to work, it's delivered to your desk.
That may be Plan B too. Who knows?
Then I'd be so overweight then, because I wouldn't have to walk down the street.
We know from a finance. He wants to drink it on his way to the office.
From a financial standpoint, though, it makes a lot of sense because retail operations are very, very low margin.
Oh, yeah.
But one of the things that they have to consider in their profit margin is the amount of shoplifting and things that, quote, disappear, unquote. This eliminates that.
That does.
Eliminates that, and that's good, and I'm all for that situation. But then again, isn't it going to increase the price over the course of time? Because now we're putting up a brick-and-mortar store. We got real estate we got to pay for.
Well, not necessarily.
Please explain.
I can't explain it.
So the point I think is, Cal, it's not one or the other. It's both, right? You get it one way, somebody else gets it another way. You say tomato, somebody else says tomato. You can buy either one at the store. And I think that's the goal here. You know, it's different, though. This is the size of a 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
You could see it working in a convenience situation.
Exactly. Ed's example, store, I think, is a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, a typical store will have about 38,000 items.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes you get apples that don't quite conform and whatever. So, you know, more to do. I mean, they were a year late in getting it up. Thankfully, it's opened up. It's a proof of concept. Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't.
And if it does, it rolls out to Whole Foods.
They'll roll out. That's right.
Because Amazon bought Whole Foods 2 years ago.
That's true. Well, Gary, thank you for this inaugural tech slice from Captain Gary. We're going to try each week to give Gary a little chance to talk about some issue or issues that have caught his attention in the news. Back in just a second, and Kasten is going to take over here, talking about the eyes of Google and a whole bunch of other people being upon us. Get your tin hats ready.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
You know, one of our humble tech experts on the program here, along with Cal and Ed Rudell, is somebody who has been described as the Chuck Norris of security. And that's Mr. Kasten Thomas, who was with us. He is actually the CEO and founder of InterWorks, a company in Rochester, Michigan, where you guys do security for a whole bunch of different kind of companies. Am I right on that?
Yeah, but primarily the large organizations. Yeah. We've done work with the state of Michigan,
right,
a number of universities and colleges. But, you know, the challenges are very much the same.
Huge, huge. Now, as I said before, I brought my tin hat. And guys, we can put the aluminum foil on right now to protect ourselves. That is, those of us who maybe tend to be conspiracy theorists. We got this title, I thought, from your response to an article that had been published
on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn. And it had been published by a fellow named Dave Williams, who was a security expert himself. And by the way, folks, if you go to internetadvisor.net, there's an image there, a really fascinating graphic that shows how Google, for instance, in this particular case, right?
Yep.
How much information they have on us. And you had a response. And your response was, caution, if you believe that chart is all that Google knows, as Google has amassed information from third-party relationships that the infographic is a small fraction of what they know. The other thing it was, you put down there, the Republican Party database that was exposed on AWS, which is Amazon
Web Services,
Had enough data on 192 million registered U.S. voters to fill the complete Harry Potter series 4 to 5 times over for each and every individual. This is scary, but it's only the tip of the iceberg.
It is the tip of the iceberg because it's not just Google. It's Apple. It's AT&T and Verizon. It's all of these services that we're logging into and handing over the information that is vital to our lives. And we can get into some of those that are really, really scary.
Well,
when you think about it, a lot of the bad guys also have that amount of information. And if they don't now, they certainly will.
Yeah, certainly. And my fear is always, you know, the tyrannical governments are always the ones that are come in with the will of the people. And the idea of a police state with this much information is not something that concerns me in the short term, but that potential of this information falling into the wrong hands is very concerning to me.
Oh, this last round of elections in France and Germany and in the U.S. as well, that kind of jingoism, that nationalism was being brought up, you know, protect us. And on that basis, you know, how many more CCTV, closed-circuit TVs, are out there now on the basis of that, justifying that? I mean, how much of what I do every day is looked at or is visible to some government agency?
Well, you know, but that might be our concern, Foster. But, you know, the kids today, they kind of think, okay, they're posing for some of those cameras when they see them. They don't have any pretense at all that there is any security, there is any privacy. They would rather be secure.
Well, guys,
they'd rather have somebody watching over and making sure that there's not bad things happening.
Do you think that's, Ed, Kel, do you think that's naive?
For their age, yes. They just don't know about, you know, the gray area yet. To many kids under the age of 25, a lot of things are still black and white, good and bad, yes and no. They haven't learned the gray areas and how that data can be used for other things other than when it was intended, you know?
Well, you know, I grew up with my parents having gone through World War II and knowing what the Nazis and the propaganda and the control that happened there.
Yeah.
You go through the Soviet Union and the history there of what the Pravda and the KGB and these really oppressive types of government can do. Because, you know, at one time, over half of the employees in the Soviet Union were employed to spy and surveil
the other half.
People.
The other half.
And so,
wow.
Giving that historical context that we grew up with, the generation that we have now, anybody who was born after, 1992 when the wall in Germany came down, they have no historical context of knowing what a tyrannical government can be about.
So I wanted to touch a little bit more on some of the other people who have eyes on us or ways that we're being watched, just to kind of get a sense of how much information You mentioned the kids. How about the universities? What, you know, what the information they're gathering about the students?
Oh, absolutely. There's I can't remember the application, but there are universities who are now deploying technology that track students' behaviors, where they go on campus, what they're doing, looking at their sleep patterns, looking at their video game playing. They can even correlate the friends that they're associating with, where they're associating with them, whether it's in the library or the dorm. And they're using big data and artificial intelligence to make correlations. The good side of this is that this this program allows the colleges with a great degree of accuracy to recognize the students at risk and help advise them on the behaviors that can help them stay in school. But from the standpoint, again, of using that information, you know, we've had times when police officers have spied on their ex-spouse through some of the surveillance techniques and cameras. That's been abused. Certainly, you don't want that happening, and you find out that about that after the fact. But imagine that student tracking system being used by an administrator, some IT geek, to stalk another student, something of that nature. So the power of this information is just hugely consuming of some people who can abuse that information and use it not for the good purposes that it was created for.
This is the difference, though. The cat's already out the bag. You know, they've already gathered all this information and are gathering more every day. My question to you, Kasten, and to everyone else here right now, how can you live in today's world and not give them that information?
Well, even if you go all cash, you're going to be tracked because your behavior is already there. There's a company based in Little Rock, Arkansas called Axiom, and it's a strange spelling, A-C-X-I-O-M. They have amassed 40 years of data on us, and they're building that profile around us to sell to the automotive companies, to the retailers. There's some people who believe that that company is even taking frequent flyer information, credit card spending information, and Kroger cards and things like that in order to amass this information. Now, they deny that, and I'll take them at their word on that. But the idea that someone is consuming all this information, and now with artificial intelligence being able to make correlations.
How can we sell this information?
that's what they're doing.
How can we package this and sell it?
Go ahead.
That's exactly what they're doing. They really are. I've been in their vaults down there. The data center is just amazing, and that's their business, is they accumulate the information. I actually thought they were collecting frequent flyer information because that's pretty available. But anything they can buy and turn around and resell, and you would not believe the operation that they have down there to do that.
Gary,
away in this little sleepy town in Arkansas.
So sleepy anymore.
I know. Gary, when we come back, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want you to talk a little bit about your visits to the vaults at Axiom. That sounds fascinating. And then, Kasten, when we come back, let's talk about what we can do about that. Privacy, in to many ways, is out the window. So how do we deal with that? And Cal, you touched on that before. We'll come back to continue that conversation with Kasten Thomas and the rest of us here at the Internet Advisor in just a moment.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
You know, one of our humble tech experts on the program here, along with Cal and Ed Rudell, is somebody who has been described as the Chuck Norris of security. And that's Mr. Kasten Thomas, who is with us. He is actually the CEO and founder of Interworks, a company in Rochester, Michigan, where you guys do security for a whole bunch of different kind of companies. Am I right on that?
Yeah, but primarily the large organizations. Yeah. We've done work with the state of Michigan,
right.
A number of universities and colleges. But you know, the challenges are very much the same.
Huge, huge. Now, what, as I said before, I brought my tin hat. And guys, we can put the aluminum foil on right now to protect ourselves. That is, those of us who maybe tend to be conspiracy theorists. We got this title, I thought, from your response to an article that had been published
on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn. And it had been published by a fellow named Dave Williams, who was a security expert himself. And by the way, folks, if you go to internetadvisor.net, there's an image there, a really fascinating graphic that shows how Google, for instance, in this particular case, right?
Yep.
How much information they have on us. And you had a response, and your response was, caution, if you believe that chart is all that Google knows, as Google has amassed information from third-party relationships that the infographic is a small fraction of what they know. The other thing it was that you put down there, the Republican Party database that was exposed on AWS, which is Amazon
Web Service.
Web Service, had enough data on 192 million registered U.S. voters to fill the complete Harry Potter series 4 to 5 times over for each and every individual. This is scary, but it's only the tip of the iceberg.
It is the tip of the iceberg because it's not just Google. It's Apple. It's AT&T and Verizon. It's all of these services that we're logging into and handing over the information that is vital to our lives. And we can get into some of those that are really, really scary.
Well,
when you think about it, a lot of the bad guys also have that amount of information, and if they don't now, they certainly will.
Yeah,
certainly. And my fear is always, you know, the tyrannical governments are always the ones that come in with the will of the people, and the idea of a police state with this much information is not something that concerns me in the short term, but that potential of this information falling into the wrong hands is very concerning to me.
Oh, this last round of elections in France and Germany and in the U.S. as well, that kind of jingoism, that nationalism was being brought up, you know, protect us. And on that basis, you know, how many more CCTV, closed-circuit TVs, are out there now on the basis of that, justifying that? I mean, how much of what I do every day is looked at or is visible to some government agency?
You know, but that might be our concern, Foster. But, you know, the kids today, they kind of think, okay, they're posing for some of those cameras when they see them. They don't have any pretense at all that there is any security, there is any privacy. They would rather be secure.
Well, guys,
they'd rather have somebody watching over and making sure that there's not bad things happening.
Do you think that's, Ed, Kel, do you think that's naive?
For their age, yes. They just don't know about, you know, the gray area yet. To many kids under the age of 25, a lot of things are still black and white, good and bad, yes and no. They haven't learned the gray areas and how that data can be used for other things other than when it was intended, you know?
Well, you know, I grew up with my parents having gone through World War II and knowing what the Nazis and the propaganda and the control that happened there.
Yeah.
You go through the Soviet Union and the history there of what the Pravda and the KGB and these really oppressive types of government can do. Because, you know, at one time, over half of the employees in the Soviet Union were employed to spy and surveil
the other half.
People.
The other half.
And so,
wow.
Giving that historical context that we grew up with, the generation that we have now, anybody who was born after, 1992 when the wall in Germany came down, they have no historical context of knowing what a tyrannical government can be about.
So I wanted to touch a little bit more on some of the other people who have eyes on us or ways that we're being watched, just to kind of get a sense of how much information. You mentioned the kids. How about the universities? What, you know, what the information they're gathering about the students?
Oh, absolutely. There's I can't remember the application, but there are universities who are now deploying technology that track students' behaviors, where they go on campus, what they're doing, looking at their sleep patterns, looking at their video game playing. They can even correlate the friends that they're associating with, where they're associating with them, whether it's in the library or the dorm. And they're using big data and artificial intelligence to make correlations. The good side of this is that this this program allows the colleges with a great degree of accuracy to recognize the students at risk and help advise them on the behaviors that can help them stay in school. But from the standpoint, again, of using that information, you know, we've had times when police officers have spied on their ex-spouse through some of the surveillance techniques and cameras. That's been abused. Certainly, you don't want that happening, and you find out that about that after the fact. But imagine that student tracking system being used by an administrator, some IT geek, to stalk another student, something of that nature. So the power of this information is just hugely consuming of some people who can abuse that information and use it not for the good purposes that it was created for.
This is the difference, though. The cat's already out the bag. You know, they've already gathered all this information and are gathering more every day. My question to you, Kasten, and to everyone else here right now, how can you live in today's world and not give them that information?
Well, even if you go all cash, you're going to be tracked because your behavior is already there. There's a company based in Little Rock, Arkansas called Axiom, and it's a strange spelling, A-C-X-I-O-M. They have amassed 40 years of data on us, and they're building that profile around us to sell to the automotive companies, to the retailers. There's some people who believe that that company is even taking frequent flyer information, credit card spending information, and Kroger cards and things like that in order to amass this information. Now, they deny that, and I'll take them at their word on that. But the idea that someone is consuming all this information, and now with artificial intelligence being able to make correlations.
How can we sell this information? Basically,
that's what they're doing.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. How can we package this and sell it?
Go ahead.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah,
they really are. I've been in their vaults down there. The data center is just amazing, and that's their business, is they accumulate the information. I actually thought they were collecting frequent flyer information because that's pretty available.
Wow.
But anything they can buy and turn around and resell, and you would not believe the operation that they have down there to do that.
Gary,
tucked away in this little sleepy town in Arkansas.
So sleepy anymore.
I know. Gary, when we come back, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want you to talk a little bit about your visits to the vaults at Axiom. That sounds fascinating. And then, Kasten, when we come back, let's talk about what we can do about that. Privacy, in to many ways, is out the window. So how do we deal with that? And Cal, you touched on that before. We'll come back to continue that conversation with Kasten Thomas and the rest of us here at the Internet Advisor in just a moment.
Thank you.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Welcome once again to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown and company here, along with Gary Baker. And it's time in the program for us to check in with Mike Brennan, the editor of MI Tech News, and take a look at some of the headlines that are in MI Tech News this week. Mike, how are you doing today?
Great, glorious day. Got a lot done, non-work related, so it was wonderful.
That is really good. Hey, let's take a look at some of your headlines, because there are some really interesting ones here. One that I noticed was there is a record leap in the years 2014 to 2016 in global temperatures, and it's been the biggest leap in temperatures since 1900.
Yeah, listen to this statistic. The Earth's average surface temperature climbed 1.6 degrees Fahrenheit from the year 1900 to 2013. Now, in 2014 through 16, it increased by another 0.43 degrees Fahrenheit. Wow, huh?
Yikes, in just that short time.
Yeah,
you wonder when somebody is going to take global warming seriously.
Well, and now they're saying about because of the thawing taking place up in the Arctic and Antarctic, additional carbon dioxide is being released from the thawed, decaying matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't even know what there could be. All sorts of interesting stuff in that ice that's been frozen for, millions of years.
It
sounds like a horror story, doesn't it?
Yeah, they were talking about viruses that might be rekindled.
Oh, my.
You know.
Ugh. We need a good freeze. I mean, a long freeze. Another ice age is wasn't, but that'll cure things. By the way, who did that study, Mike?
University of Michigan that led it, and there was folks from the University of Arizona. So this is a collegiate study, meaning, you know, nobody has an axe to grind or anything like that.
Yeah,
it's just
tell
it like it is, you know? So.
Wow. That's fascinating. This next one, I couldn't help but laugh. And we were talking about, you know, having tin hats on in the last segment. It's what to do when your smartphone tells you a ballistic missile is headed your way.
Yes, our good friends at CNET, I borrowed their story. I hyped it here. But as everybody knows, it was like, I don't know, 38 minutes or 40 minutes or something that everybody's smartphones, including visitors in Honolulu, probably all over the islands, it said to them, a ballistic missile is incoming. This is not a drill.
Oh, my Lord.
And it was a mistake. Somebody in the communications area for, you know, emergency stuff hit the wrong switch.
Yeah,
think about that. If Trump had been all over that, he could have seen that as a provocation, and he could have launched missiles. I mean, that's how scary that was.
I have a friend that heard that. They were on vacation in Hawaii and took cover. They tried to get in out of the way of wherever they could. And 38 minutes later, after trembling, trying to figure out what's going to happen, 38 minutes later, they found out, it was just a mistake.
No. They found out right away, within 5 minutes, but the governor lost their password and had to get it recovered. That's why they took the additional 32 minutes.
No.
Yes.
Yeah, it just gets worse and worse. You know?
My God.
So anyway, if you go to that, go to my website, there's a story there. It has a really nice FAQ from CNET. But essentially, if a ballistic missile is coming in, I guess you just pour yourself a stiff drink and wait, right?
the thing I really like to know is in 9 months, when they run a statistic, is the birth rate accelerated?
Yeah.
Well, Gary says he'll motor out into the Atlantic, right?
that's my plan.
All right. And another one. This is kind of an interesting one. Another headline you have there was a U of M study finds that vehicle ownership and miles driven is rising.
Yeah. But not as high as it was way back when. I mean, if we go back to 2006, we're still below that. But it's been a nice upward trend after the debacle that we had in the first decade in this state where we just got hammered. So, I mean, now people are buying cars again. It's not up to where it was in 2006, but it's certainly advancing.
Yeah, I was around, matter of fact, for that. That was the cusp for us just before things crashed, was the incredible sales that were going on. And we all, at that time, I was working for a company called Daimler Chrysler.
Heard of them,
and,
yeah.
You heard of them. And the thought going around was, how long can this continue? This, you know, bubble cannot get, I mean, how many people are buying new, how many new cars can people buy? And eventually it's going to receive, and it was shortly after that that we went through that enormous crash. Hopefully that doesn't happen. Mike.
And on the flip side, that was a four-year depression. I've never gone through a four-year depression. Yep. That was really hard, you know.
Yeah, I lost a lot during that time, including, you know, a job, and it was a really challenging time for us as a family. So, yeah, I agree with you. That was a hard time. Mike, MI Tech News is a free service that you have. Tell people about how often it comes out.
Well, it's on 24/7. I mean, you come to the website, you can listen to this show. You can listen to my show with Matt Rausch. You can listen to a number of shows that I partner with because we have those podcasts anchored there. You can watch videos and get your news that way. And then on Wednesdays and Fridays, we send out an email newsletter blast to about 5,000 folks, which includes emails that you provided and Gary provided and I did and people who have since signed up. So it keeps me busy.
I bet it does. You also, I notice, have a video assets in there now. And as a matter of fact, we are looking at one to talk about for today.
Oh, on IoT Tech Connect, you mean?
Yes. Yes.
I think you're allowing me to put in a shameless plug. Thank you very much. So Rick Becker from Cloud Tech One and I have been working on this for about 10 months. And so on April 4th at the Troy Marriott, we're having this big event that's focused on Michigan IoT. The Planet M folks from MEDC are the title sponsor. Tanya Matthews from the Michigan Science Center is our MC. We're going to have STEM training, autonomous vehicles, connected tech, VR, AR, and everybody's going to be able to play with the stuff, take a look at the stuff, and it's all going to be Michigan stuff.
That's cool.
So we're
going to be there as well. I'll be there with a little display for the Internet Advisor. And we look forward to greeting people as they come to this IoT Tech Connect. It's going to be a great time. Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks, Foster. Always a great time talking to you and even Captain Gehrig. So.
Have yourself a good weekend.
Thank you, Mike. All right. Talk to you later.
Take Bye-bye. Care. That's Mike okay. Brennan, the editor of MI Tech News. And again, you can get that sent to you free of charge twice a week by going to mitechnews.com and putting in your email address, and you're on your way to receiving it. Kasten, before we wrap things up, I know you focus, and we've got maybe a minute or two here at the end. Talk about what you do for major companies in terms of protecting them.
Sure. We've amassed a database, and we analyze the 10 or 20 companies that are coming into the market providing information security technologies. We evaluate those, and we've established some triggers that say, hey, here's something that you really need to look at. One, because the technology is positively disruptive. I used to say it was disruptive, and people go, uh-oh, but positively disruptive. But they also have a unique solution that solves real problems that the market and our customers are looking for. And additionally, they have the kind of venture capital and executive leadership that sets them apart that says, you know what, this is going to
it's
be
going to last.
And we've got a track record of identifying these companies that go back. But now that we have a methodical process for how to categorize those, prioritize them, and analyze them, we're finding some really good things before anybody else does.
That's excellent. By the way, that business is called Interworks, and it's based in Rochester, Michigan. Kasten is the boss there, one of the founders. It's good to have you.
Actually, I work for everybody else there.
You work for everybody else. But it's good to have you on our team now with one of our tech experts.
Glad
on a regular basis. So you got the eyes of Kasten are upon you.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong,
and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter and at Detroit's newest podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Thank you for joining us for hour number two of the Internet Advisor. For those of you who are joining us on our podcast or listening to us on the Michigan Talk Radio Network, we're delighted to have you with us. We have an hour of the tech experts. And for those of you who have sent us email, we're going to be giving some answers of the questions you ask. And then we'll be looking at Apple and things that are going on there and all sorts of good stuff coming up this hour of the Internet Advisor.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
As I said, this second hour is the hour of the Tech Advisors. When we're live on our flagship station, WJR, we are open with our phone lines to your questions, and we take people's calls and get them as much help as we possibly can in the little time that we have. But you can also, during the week, simply go to InternetAdvisor.net, and there's a Contact Us button there. Click on that, and it will allow you to send us an email with your questions. And Mr. Ed Rudell is here, our tech expert. Ed, you're leading things off because we got a question sent into us by Bill Osborne about an aging Dell XPS laptop.
Well, I was really excited when I first saw this because, you know, what am I working on right now? I'm working on a Dell XPS. But you have to realize that Dell, the XPS, they have two different product lines. They have a desktop and a laptop, and they have many generations of each. So what Bill had was a Dell XPS, and he finally mailed us in the model number, which is an M1330. And what happened was is that he went out. It originally shipped with Vista. He decided to go out and buy a Windows 10 license and install it. And initially, it worked well until the last Microsoft Creators Update came and installed, which then caused all sorts of problems, slowness, crashing. He's had nothing but problems since that done. And that's just typical of Microsoft Creators Updates, because not only is it updating applications on that thing, but it's also updating drivers and it's misidentifying drivers on older systems. Usually the fix is to go to the manufacturer's website and download updated video, networking, wireless, chipsets, that type of thing. Maybe USB ports. See if the manufacturer has any updated drivers. If they don't, just download all the Windows 10 drivers provided by the manufacturer. Heck, even download the Windows 8 drivers if that's all it will support, if that's all the manufacturer is supporting. Yeah. They'll still install in Windows 10 and usually take care of the problem with the laptop or a desktop where Creators Updates has crashed.
Even one that old?
Well, that's the thing. Dell does not, on an M1330, they only provide Windows 7 drivers. It's the highest they'll go to.
Oh.
So what, unfortunately, Bill, where the circumstance yours is in, you're either going to have to do a system restore back to the Creative Update or prior to the Creative Update.
Right.
And hopefully get it working and then, tell Microsoft never to provide that update, but good luck with that because you'll be missing all these other security updates.
Yeah, yeah.
It might be time to retire this computer and get a new one.
You know,
there is one other option, and I tried spelling it out, but it's very difficult to do. What you could do is you can go into Device Manager and look at each individual device listed in the Device Manager, like the video card. Is it Intel HD 830?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is the network card? Is it a... It's probably an Intel 6220. right, you know, right. something like that. Yeah. You can actually go to the Intel website and download chip-specific drivers that work across many manufacturers' platforms. Yeah. In the company I work for, we roll this out because we have both Dells and HPs, but many of them use the exact same wireless and wired chips in there. Mm-hmm. And you can roll them across multiple platforms and different manufacturers, and they work. But the trick is to go to the manufacturer Intel or AMD, depending
on... that's asking an awful lot.
I would have a difficult time locating those.
You'd have to love to tinker, I think, in many ways, to...
Well, and that's what a lot of our listening audience are. They consider themselves tinkerers, and darn it, I'm going to fix this problem.
Yeah, exactly.
And good luck to them. But it might be very difficult in this instance.
And it seems like, I don't know, and it can disagree if not, but it seems like when you start to deal with trying to increase the longevity of a product that's probably been out longer than it should be, you have to be a tinkerer. You have to be a tinkerer because if the company says, well, we're no longer going to support this, or we've moved on to newer product and stuff like that, now you got to go out and you got to hunt for the drivers. You got to find the drivers that are going to work. You got to try one. And maybe that driver might work. It might not work and that sort of thing. Maybe you had to put on a previous driver before you put on that driver. So you become a tinkerer when you try to get the longevity out of a machine further than it should be.
Yeah,
I've looked on, you could buy one of these computers, the Dell XPS M1330 for $50 used.
Oh,
I'm not kidding.
Wow.
That's how old this is.
Yeah.
It's 8 years old, but that's without a hard drive, you know?
Yeah.
But, coming back to the tinker comment, whenever I tinker, my problem is I don't know how to untinker.
That's true.
How do I untink?
And I've learned that lesson. A lot of times what I'll do is I'll create a system image of my entire thing to an external hard drive just in case. And that's what System Restore was so good at.
Yeah, exactly. And, and it's also the mantra, Cal's mantra, which is backup, 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 backup.
Right.
And if you're doing that on a regular basis, then you can tinker all you want and you've got something to go back to.
No, not for me, because if I do multiple backups, then I restore one, and then I rename it, and I forget which one it is.
Okay.
I can't find the one that I really want.
I know. Okay, I got you. I've had that happen as well.
The other thing that I saw that was really interesting is that Burger King has jumped into the net neutrality by releasing a YouTube video concerning that and giving the consumer viewpoint as if you're trying to buy a Big Mac. So search YouTube. Well, I think we have the link on the Internet Advisor website.
I'll make sure we have it up there,
It is hilarious.
It is absolutely the best. It is the best. I love watching that.
Where Burger King basically says, you want to pay more for that burger? Well, you got to wait 15 minutes if you don't. So if you want to pay $50 for a Whopper, but, if you want to get chicken, that's fine. We can do that right now because that's what we're pushing right now.
But if you go to a high-end restaurant, they've got the good tables for the big spenders.
It's a very practical expression of what net neutrality is all about. Okay, back in just a moment, Cal's going to come up to the plate. He's got something to say about Apple.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Well, it's been a while since we've heard from the gray-haired wonder, Mr. Cal Carson, who is our expert on all things Apple. We could call this the Report from the Orchard with Cal. How you doing, Cal? It's good to have you back with us.
Yet another juicy segment. I'm doing great, man. Things have been going just fine. And like I said, I've been away for a little bit, but I'm really glad to be back here and being able to share some time with you guys because you're the only friends I have.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. But you've got a good deal to talk about this week in terms of changes to operating systems, I know, for Apple.
Well, yeah, we've had, it seems like, it's scary, but it seems like darn near every other week we're getting a new update for the iOS on the iOS devices. And now we're all the way up to, if I'm not mistaken, 11.2.2. 2 I have on one device, and I think they just announced 11.2.5 the other day. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, these are devices that you need to update if you have an iPad or iPhone,
right,
or even your Apple TV. They all run on iOS, so you're going to want to do the updates for all those different things. A lot of the components in these updates have a lot to do with features for the iPhone X, but they also are starting to trickle some of those features down toward some of the other iPhones. For example, the wallpapers that were exclusively for the iPhone X are now trickling down to iPhone 8 and iPhone 7 as well.
I mean, that's a lot of cosmetic stuff. How about in terms of some of the applications that are in there?
Well, some of the things that I noticed that I thought were kind of interesting, and I didn't notice this that happened with 11.1, but iOS 11.1 actually broke the calculator on the phone.
Oh, really?
And 11.2 fixed it back again, which is good to see as well. In the Apple TV app, with the newest update, you now have a tab for live sports.
Oh.
So if you like to follow sports and that sort of thing, you can get into that really, really easily with the new update on there. There was some things as far as the controls for Bluetooth and Wi-Fi for indicators. Mm-hmm. When you have them disabled, they have different colors now. So it's easy at a glance to be able to tell whether you actually have that Bluetooth turned off, and that's the reason why it's not pairing in your car.
One of the things I think I saw, Cal, was that there's been this hullabaloo about Apple slowing down some of the older computers. Is it true that I thought I saw that with the newest update coming, and this will be not just for iPhone X, but for the other ones leading up to it, that you'll be able to modify that?
They're going to give you a certain level of tweaking that you can do to that situation. But a lot of what they were doing with the slowdown was based upon the age of the battery in the phone and how it was delivering the power to the CPU.
Right. Right.
And the best fix in that particular case is to just go in and get your phone checked out. If your battery's not doing that well, then go ahead and get it replaced for that $29 fee that they're offering right now, which is really a good deal.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I had heard that they actually ran out of batteries, so they had reduced the price if you're willing to wait a little while, and you can get that battery replaced for $29.
Wow. But if I pay more, can I get it immediately?
You can if you go to Burger King.
Yeah. I was going to say, it would take me a whole weekend to collect that many bottles to be able to afford $29.
Yeah. It's normally a repair that's, I think it's either $59 or something like that. So you can save a few dollars by dealing with that. There is even, from what I read in one particular article, there is even an instance where if the battery performance has affected the phone to a certain point, they will replace the entire phone.
Wow.
Because they don't have the batteries right now, they'll just say, here's a new phone, go. So if you're having those issues, take it in, have them check it out. It doesn't cost anything. Just set up an appointment with the Apple technician, take it in, and see whether or not they can take care of you.
So, Cal, is there a good application that I can run on my iPhone that will give me a battery status so that I can watch the battery? Let's say I ran that once a month so I could say, oh, it's really starting to affect and confirm what my perception is.
Yeah, which we can do with Android. I think you can follow battery usage a little better, can't you?
I'm sure they probably got an application like that. I'm going to be quite honest with you, Kasten. I'm not having a problem, so I didn't even bother pursuing it. But you know something? I should look into it because I know on the Mac itself, Coconut Battery was an application you could download that would give you a full assessment of what your battery was doing.
Oh, yeah.
How many cycles it had on it, how many cycles there were left to do, and that sort of thing.
So there were quite a few applications, actually, for the Mac itself.
Yeah, so I'm going to put that on my list to look up and see if I can find one of that so I can give you an answer.
Yeah, but
I'll expect the text from you before midnight tonight.
Even though Android does provide the ability to track what is using all your CPU time or battery usage, a lot of times it's useless information. I mean, if it says, hey, it's Outlook or Facebook, that's one thing. But when it says Google Play Services, you're screwed. You know, it's just downloading updates. I had Google Play services using 75% of my battery life.
Wow.
It didn't do anything. It was constantly looking for updates, and I couldn't stop it. I told it not to update anything. And what I ended up having to do, because something was corrupt, I had to reboot my phone. Rebooted my phone, and everything went back to normal. And it's something about the Google. Anyways, good luck. Once you have the information, it's hell trying to figure out what to do with it.
I'm seeing an article from Computer World that says that Apple has confirmed that iOS 11.3 will introduce new battery health controls in the settings. So you will have, apparently, more control there.
Now, how much battery life should we get on these things? You know, I'm thinking, what, 10 years? Well, is that pie in the sky? I'm just
kidding. Well, it's a lithium ion battery, and that is a huge pie.
That's a big pizza pie. I love pie.
You looked over and you saw the look of disbelief when you said 10 years. Whoa.
I want 10 years out of my laptop batteries. Hell, you're lucky if you get 4 years out of a laptop battery.
Oh, yeah. Jenny's battery's
probably
gone,
what, man. a year, 2 years? You'd probably think the life of your usually.
Maybe this is a little cynical on my part, that it's gauged so that you are more inclined to buy the next round of iPhone every 2 years.
Tinfoil. No, you know something? I agree.
That's been my pattern.
Captive audience.
I'm going to agree with you to a point, and that is this, Foster, and that is, generally speaking, the contract you would sign with your carriers for 2 years.
Yes, exactly.
So why wouldn't you not make the device last for the duration of the contract so that you can lock them into the next one?
And when I hear, and matter of fact, I think, Ed, you were the one who came up with this information about, or was it Kel, that during the hurricane, Tesla was able to remotely extend the battery life
on their vehicles and on their remote homes, you know, the whole house power systems.
Yes. Kasten, was that yours?
It was me.
Oh, it was you. Okay, you came up with that. So, I mean, what we see is they have, more and more of these companies have the ability to remotely affect the performance of the devices that we have.
Well, just like Apple was able to remotely, you know, affect the CPUs on those machines.
Yeah, exactly.
When you buy into an ecosystem, you get the good and the bad with it. You know, that's just the way it goes.
So what else is up with Apple? I mean, I heard they released some sort of Borg cube or something.
Borg cube is pretty funny. They actually released a new sound device. It's a speaker that you can talk to just like Alexa, and you can play your music through
Resistance is futile.
Sort of thing. The only difference that I have found with
Dave,
this speaker.
Open the door. Sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It took three tries to get it. We got him.
You got me. What can I say?
How about we talk about that when we come back?
Yeah, we ought to do that.
In depth.
Oh, we'll talk to it in depth for sure.
More about the home. Was it HomePod?
HomePod, yes.
HomePod. We'll talk about that when we come back about Apple with Kel Carson and the rest of the crew here, our tech experts on the Internet Advisor. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. This is our tech expert segment. We're talking about Apple right now. And Kel Carson is, of course, back with us in studio. We're delighted to have him here. And as a matter of fact, he's doing double duty engineering as well. Thanks so much for that, Kel.
Oh, where else could I have so much fun for so little money?
And Kel, we've been talking about Apple and some of the things that are coming down the line with their new update to the mobile devices, 11.
Well, it's up to 11.2.5 now.
Is it 0.5? Okay, yes. Okay. I was saying 0.3. In any case, we're talking about in the break about
which is applied on all devices that run iOS, which would be the iPhone, the iPads, and Apple TV,
Apple Watch.
Apple Watch uses WatchOS.
Ah, oh, a different OS. Oh, wow.
Different OS for the watch.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so you have to watch out for that.
Okay. The next one we began to talk about was, is it called HomePod?
It's called HomePod. Okay. You can order them now, and they'll be available on the 9th of February.
Okay. And talk to us about this device.
Well, this is a speaker Similar to Alexa and all those other guys that are out there. Alexa and who's the other one?
Google Home. Google Assistant, as they're calling it.
Right.
That's right, yeah.
So you can subscribe to the music services that are available in the Apple ecosystem, just like you can do for Google, just like you can do for Amazon. So you have all this music that you can listen to. You can also have it do assisting things for you as well. So it's basically in that same realm. The difference is I think it's a much more intensive speaker. The sound quality, reportedly, is supposed to be extremely well for it. It has a couple other tricks that even if you bought one now, it's not available till later. For example, if you have one HomePod and you decide you want to do another HomePod, you sit them in the same room together. They figure out that, oh, we're in the same room together, and I'm on the right side, you're on the left side, now we're going to run stereo.
Automatically,
without you doing it.
Well, because didn't Apple buy Beats?
Yes.
So for $2,500, if you bought a MacBook Pro, you got a free set of $250 Beats headphones.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So it's got that type of intelligence with it, too. The thing that drove me up the wall, and Kasten reminded me of it during the break, first thing he said was, it's priced just like all the other Apple products. And I said, yeah, it is, because it's an Apple product. But here's what drove me nuts. And I was on a forum with another fellow employee yesterday. And the first thing he said was, I put out there, you know, HomePod's available, you can get it, la, la, la. And the first thing he said was, for the price of a HomePod, I could buy Alexa and 23 of these things and 44 of these things and 55 of these things and that sort of thing. And I'm saying to myself, yeah, you can. But why? And then the other thing was, spend your money on what you want. If you like Alexa, get Alexa. Be happy. But you don't have to diminish another product to try and justify your product. Just buy it and enjoy it. You know, I wrote back to him. I said, you know something? For the same price that we're paying you to work here, I could get 35 people in China to do that. Why are we even spending money on you? We're wasting our money.
Okay.
You know,
so, how much is the
He hasn't responded.
Approximately. What's the reported price that's going to be?
Yeah, about $400.
Oh, $400?
Like okay. $350 or something like that.
I saw $329 when I looked today on the pre-order, but there's probably Apple Care and a number of other things that you would add to it.
Yeah, I always
You want a power cable with that?
You don't need power cables anymore. I thought everything was wireless.
I always go with the Apple Care.
You know what would
so
be really
that's
sweet?
That's why I loved it that way.
Is if they incorporated the wireless charger system in the home so I could set my iPhone on top of it and it would charge my iPhone. Wouldn't that be a bonus?
Be careful.
Why? Is that the next one?
You never know.
Well, my question is, Cal, seriously, is when is wireless coming to Apple? It's in so many other places.
When you say wireless, what do you mean?
Wireless charging
is already available on iPhone 8 and iPhone 10.
Yes.
Oh, it is? Okay, I beg your pardon.
Yeah, if you have a 10 or an 8, they automatically charge wirelessly.
Well, darn, that's why I'm three behind because I'm in a 7 Plus.
And it uses the QI charging standard, so it's not Apple proprietary. So any QI charger that you can get, it'll charge on that.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
The key then will be to distribute it too, like things like the HomePod and some other devices.
Well, that'd be nice.
There.
Now, what would be really nice is if they incorporated a magnet on those darn chargers so it wouldn't slide across my dashboard.
Now, here's the other thing that I don't know about Alexa, so you guys can enlighten me on it. If I got a call on my telephone, can I transfer it to Alexa?
You know, I don't know. I don't use it.
You can't do that with the HomePod. So if you're out getting out the car, you're talking on the phone, you get in the house, you go like, I want to transfer this call to my HomePod, transfer it over there, and then you continue to call over there.
Now, is that presuming a lot more intelligence in Siri than I certainly have experienced with that device?
Well, Siri's getting smarter with every given day because she keeps going down to Axiom and picking up more information.
Now we know what it costs.
That's the only thing I can figure. But yeah, Siri is getting better with every iteration. But, you know, it's like all of them. You know, everyone that I've used, they all seem to have their strong points and they have their weak points.
Yeah.
And you learn how to, when you pick that ecosystem that you're going to work in, whether it's Google or Amazon or Apple, you kind of pick it and you learn how to make that ecosystem work.
One of the things I found with Siri, though, is, and it may have frustrated me terribly.
She doesn't like old men, though.
That's it. Doggone it. That's it.
Well, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with where they get the source of the information.
Yeah.
And let me put it this way. When I ask Google, okay, Google, what are the ingredients of a Burger King Whopper? You know, and we in the last segment we talked about how net neutrality and stuff like that. Well, where does Google get that information? It goes right to the wiki page.
Yes.
Right? And guess what was happening? As soon as Burger King released that, people thought it would be really funny to go to the wiki page and edit it because you can edit that. And basically the ingredients of a Whopper include 2 all-beef patties of small children, special sauce, blah, blah, blah. So Google was actually reading this when people were asking about Whopper on their phones, and that included 2 small children.
Oh, my Lord.
You know? That's yummy.
Oh, my goodness.
But yeah, and it was awful. So maybe Siri doesn't get it from an open source like that, and it probably uses a better resource.
But I've had problems with it just misunderstanding, and I, you know, being an announcer, I've got to be good at articulating and have been for a good 44 years on the air, but I still cannot get that darn thing to understand me. It'll miss something. I was asking for a recipe today, and it just missed a very simple term in my question to it.
You mean like water?
Yeah. Well, I asked for a recipe for a brand muffin with pumpkin, and it missed. I forget what the word. Maybe recipe was the word that they missed, and it was like, why? It's not terribly complicated.
Any background noise?
No. Okay.
But it may have been the uplink as well, because if there's a glitch in the transmission of the packets that contain part of a word, it may miss part of it.
Now, does Google work on that same basis that when you ask Google something or Alexa with Amazon, that it is going back to a server?
I think they all go back to
the
server.
They do.
They have to. There's not that much intelligence or CPU capability within my phone to do speech recognition. It's uploaded. Because if I don't have access to the data network, it doesn't understand what I'm saying.
That's right? True. Yes, yeah. That's true.
So, yeah, the horsepower is back there in the big old mainframe sitting up in wherever.
So the quality of the connection that you have, wherever you are,
I'm sure that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, determine how effective it is. Okay, good.
What you're saying.
Thank you.
Yeah. So it's really embarrassing when you ask for top 10 Christmas presents for your wife and you don't have a data network. And then when you walk into the house and a half an hour later, your phone says, here's the top 10 list for your Christmas presents for your wife. And it finally spews it out. There should be a timeout for something like that, okay?
Hey, I have a quick question for you, and this is troubleshooting. And I was standing at Trader Joe's today, and somehow this came up with 3 people who were there, 2 people who were on registers and myself. I have a 7 Plus, and the fingerprint reader is not reading my fingerprint accurately. I mean, like maybe 60% of the time it reads it, and the other times, it doesn't.
What time of year is it now?
Well, it was winter.
Yeah. What happens a lot of times that I notice that happens with me is my fingers will chap. The skin will start to change on it. And for most of the time, it can pretty much read it. And it'll be dry. So once in a while, I have to recalibrate. Or, as a smart person, I do more than one finger.
If the thumb's not working, I try the index finger.
Okay. And if that doesn't work, I try the other hand.
All 3 of us with different, the other person had a 7 Plus and somebody else had an SE, were saying the same thing, that it was an issue. I didn't know if it was an issue in general. The other thing I notice is if I have any lotion on my hands or moisture.
Yes.
You know, if I wash my hands and I try to start, doesn't work.
That was the number one thing that happened when the 6 came out. Wasn't the 6 the first one that had the fingerprint scanning? And it was notorious that it did not work with women because they were typically wear lotion on their hands, where men don't. But the 7 Plus was excellent.
But you get around that if you get yourself
in trouble.
10.
Well, you have to, you know, get your thumb to be clean or whatever finger that you're using on that. Coming back in just a minute.
Now back to the Internet Advisor.
Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
I think we'll wrap up here on a maybe kind of a scary note in some ways. I saw an article today about Davos, the meeting of the the billionaires club, getting together and talking about the future of mankind. And George Soros, he is one of the, as a billionaire who is a kind of a curmudgeon who's been around for a long time, expressed his concern about the amount of control of data that major corporations like Google and Amazon. And other corporations like that have, and their connection with governments. And I know, Kasten, you've taken a look at some of that stuff as well, and you had some looks in particular. One of those players, Amazon, the data that you showed me is really scary when you think about it.
It is, and you know, we have controls about how many radio stations can be owned in a market.
Right.
And
right,
there's always these political battles of how we limit the impact that media can have and news sources can
have. By the way, that thing about radio stations and TV stations is almost ludicrous.
Sure.
Because the internet has completely wiped it out.
Right, right. And, you know, now there's calls in some quarters for regulating the internet and how mm-hmm. information gets distributed there.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I think a lot of people haven't connected the dots on is Amazon and the U.S. government and the relationships that exist. Jeff Bezos, in I think 3-4 years ago, purchased the Washington Post.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and just this week there was an article that I read about the publisher for the Washington Post saying to the union and the employees, you need to be thankful for Jeff Bezos because without him, you don't have a job. And it came across as in a threatening manner.
Mm.
There was a news reporter who was disciplined by the Washington Post for writing an article that was critical of Jeff Bezos and Amazon.
Wow.
And I think it was May of last year that the Washington Post sent out a memo that no employees of the Washington Post should post on social media anything critical of the suppliers, the advertisers, the customers of the Washington Post.
That, you know, to me, guys, that throws the whole notion of news coming, you know, how do I get my news? And when I get my news, what has it been colored by? And, you know, am I getting real news or just propaganda?
You know, I think, if I can jump in here, Foster.
Oh, please.
I think news, in the sense of what we're used to what news is, really doesn't exist anymore, or it's really watered down. Because news used to come from a source, a group of trained individuals to gather information, disseminate it, and then present it out to the
general
public.
And verify it in two or three sources.
Yes, yes, certify,
and make sure it's right and stuff like that. And that's what we used to call news. Now news comes too many different ways.
Yeah.
News comes from that old source. News comes from everybody who has a phone that has a camera on it.
I would make a distinction. Information or data comes from any, and we're forced to be the editors.
Okay, so we just get information now. We don't get news.
Absolutely. That's what I believe.
And it's really sad because even the authoritative news services have fallen victim to the media of themselves and the ever-growing threat that they have to make money with that media.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we even take sources from information from people with phones, and we put it on a regular news, and we say it's news, but it's not news.
And if
there's information.
There's also a danger in having that freedom of selecting my news, because now two people can be in a room talking about one topic, and because they're taking their personal news feed, and there's this concept called confirmatory bias, that I tend to be attracted to those news sources or those sources of information that confirm the things that I believe or the things that I want to believe.
And that's the echo chamber.
Yeah,
that's the echo chamber of social media. You see that on Facebook all the time, which is a horrible place to get any kind of information from, because, you know, it's just cheerleading for different topics. And I've often, there was, as a matter of fact, in our church, there were some issues that were being dealt with, and one of the pastors said, the last place you need to be discussing this is Facebook.
Right.
Because it will be just inflamed comment.
Well,
that's all.
Facebook is where you go where you want to start a fire. you go there, there's tinder laying all over the place. And all you got to do is run in with a match. If you really want that fire to get going fast, take some gasoline.
I'd like to issue a challenge to all of our listeners. Please send me an email if you've ever changed another person's opinion on a controversial topic on Facebook.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Sorry, you won't be getting much mail, I don't think. You know, Ed, you and I were talking about this on the way in. I think both of us trust NPR, the National Public Radio.
Yes.
News sources. Am I right?
Yeah. Yes.
Because I would consider them pretty impartial. Some people listening to this broadcast right now are screaming.
Right.
They're saying, no,
not
liberals.
That liberals.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'll offer a counterpoint.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
You know, there's a difference between truthful news and truthful source and presenting things in a perspective that lends toward a bias rather than being, you know, we're in this discussion about fake news.
Yes.
I think more dangerous than fake news is biased news. And sometimes that's offering information, but you can say as much by what you leave out of a conversation
as
you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that NPR sometimes falls into that category of providing not all sides of the story.
Right.
And so does Fox, and so does CNN.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and it's almost become a juggling act that I know if I want to get the hyper-conservative, I'll go to this source.
Right.
And if I want to get the hyper, quote-unquote, liberal.
It's hard to get the whole source, but you can listen to two different sides.
Yeah.
And how, it's funny how each, as Kasten just said, leaves critical things out.
Yeah.
It was funny listening to NPR and Fox during the debates, presidential debates.
Yes.
And I'm like, they did not say that, or this person did not say that. And they clearly said that, you know, oh my goodness, it was awful.
Well, the problem is when news and money got mixed together.
It's always been there.
Yeah, but when news really became, news got more mixed in with it because of the ratings and because it went from the big three to everybody. So everybody's trying to get a chunk of that same pie.
Yeah.
And so now it's like, well, we're not going to worry about whether it's really good. We're just going to worry about if we can get people to listen.
You know,
and so the way I solved the problem was I go to the left-wing whack jobs and the right-wing whack jobs and just be entertained. And I don't even follow the news anymore because I don't know who to believe.
I can't say. I probably would lean toward, depending on a source like NPR, personally, because of the track record they have of having correspondents all over the world. And, just a track record of good sound information.
Well, for the record, for our bosses, there's only one news source that I really trust.
What's that?
And that's the Great Voice of the WJR.
There we go. We'll have to get back to Gene Fogle and tell him, we trust you, Gene. Gene's one of our reporters here at WJR. Well, guys, this has been a great program today, and we hope to continue to do this kind of thing for our listeners, that we're going to be settling in our second hour with our tech experts talking about different subjects that have come up in the news. And if you've got a question for us, please send us an email by going to internetadvisor.net. On the Contact Us button there, you can leave a question. And also, after we've done our podcast, usually by Sunday night or Monday morning, you can put a question in the very bottom in the comments section. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week on the Internet Advisor.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.